This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
Well, you heard it from CBS and from Laura Oakes at the top of the hour. I am impressed that Hennepin County has charged an ICE agent. Good for Mary Moriarty, good for Hennepin County. I'm not saying whether or not this ICE agent is guilty, but I sure am glad that the Hennepin County Attorney's Office has charged this agent. And what an absolute load of crap as far as the effort that it took. We should all be embarrassed of the way the federal government obstructed this investigation from day one. Welcome to Drive Time. It's Jason, 651-461-9226. The Hennepin County Attorney has charged, not in the two deaths that happened in Minneapolis, but in the case that maybe is, I mean, obviously nothing is more outrageous than the taking of another human's life. This case, though, so outrageous that even the federal government admitted that they were putting this ICE agent on leave because it looked like he completely lied about what happened. This is the case. Remember the case where an ICE agent said he was being attacked by a snow shovel and a broom? And it turned out that the city of Minneapolis had a surveillance camera right in that area. Reading the criminal complaint here, just as a reminder to me that the people who continue to try to defend the actions of the ICE agents in Minnesota by blaming protesters, by blaming the mayor and the governor, there's one place to blame. And it's ICE agents who are acting as if they were above the law rather than they were there to enforce the law. And reading through this document, it reminds me that that is what people were protesting against. That is what made people upset, this feeling that a supposed law enforcement agency was coming into our community and just doing whatever the hell they wanted. It is not the way that our county sheriffs would act. It's not the way that our state patrol would act. They just wouldn't. In this case, Hennepin County attorney is saying Christian Castro, 52 years old, nationwide arrest warrant for him. Because this guy shot into a house trying to shoot Julio Sosa Solis. This was January 14th. I remember seeing local news reports where you saw the gunshot in the house. This guy was initially charged with assaulting a federal officer. Christy Noem accused him of an act of attempted murder. And the charges were dropped, and a federal judge said that these federal agents made all this stuff up. Law enforcement agents are not, should not be above the law. And that includes ICE agents. I am glad that this agent was charged because it does show that the law still matters. The law still matters. Now, will this guy ever face any justice? We're going to talk to Joe Tamburino about that in our next hour. Because I don't know if you really have much of a chance of going after a federal law enforcement agent in Hennepin County court. But I just reject those of you. And look, let me give you my overall belief on this. My overall belief is that there should be a high level of deference to law enforcement agents who are doing their job. And I reject the idea that whenever something goes wrong during a law enforcement, you know, a justified pursuit, an investigation, an interaction that goes wrong, my bias is in favor of the law enforcement officer. We have paid these folks to do a job to protect us. And screwing up on the job, to me, doesn't mean you get hit with an attempted murder charge. There needs to be some middle ground on these cases, my view. And when you lie about what happened, when you repeatedly lie about what happened, when what you did was so egregious as the facts that we know them in this case indicate it is, yeah, you should be charged. You should face the music. I don't think overall, today, 2026, law enforcement officers have to worry every day when they do their job that they're going to get charged with murder. I think the pendulum has swung back to reality a little bit. I think there was a stretch post the murder, and yes, I said murder, of George Floyd, where there was political hay to be made by going after law enforcement officers. Today, I don't know. I don't think it's the same as it was then. And so I do think the county attorney in Hennepin County, now she's not running again. What does she care? But I'm glad she did it. 651-461-9226. Are you with me, or do you think I'm off my rock? Texter says, sure, Mary Moriarty will charge a federal ICE agent doing his job, but she won't charge all the true criminals out there. The county is an absolute joke. She is, too. So I guess I would ask the texter, like, and I have plenty of disagreement about the fact that the county attorney here has been, I think, more interested in helping those accused of crimes than prosecuting people who have been committed, who have committed crimes. I think, generally speaking, you could say that this office is more interested in providing a form of social justice, if you wanted a broad critique. But for me, if you want to get down to the nitty gritty, like, I would like to see tougher prosecutions in a time when crime is above what our norm is. At the same time, I don't see anybody else really doing much to try to prevent things like car theft or juvenile crime. And while the proportion of effort spent on these things I don't always agree with, when's the last time you saw anyone in elected office do anything to actually try to prevent crime? We're pretty good at arresting people when they commit it. We're, you know, so-so at locking people up. We're not real good at preventing it. And so she's tried to do that with car thefts, with juvenile crime. But we look at individual cases. We don't look at the overall, oh, like, she's soft. I don't know. Texter says, if somebody wants those committing crimes prosecuted, this agent, ICE agent, qualifies. That's what I think. I think it unquestionably qualifies. Benjamin says, the federal government has been an embarrassment for a while now. And Frank says, how come we haven't had the killers of Alex Pretty and Renee Good charged? We'll see if there are charges on those. I'm curious what you guys think. I do believe that those cases are both more difficult. They are both more difficult than this one. The Alex Pretty case, I think, is, there's a better shot you would have in filing charges there. But when you watch that unfold in real time, that does come closer to my sort of bias of saying this was bungled and very poorly done. Mm. And I'm not sure to me it rises to the level of a typical crime, a attempted murder, a murder, an assault, a reckless homicide, any of those. To me, I'm not sure that I'm there. I'm not there. But again, the federal government didn't even help. Mary Moriarty had to go through a full investigative process to even figure out who this ICE agent was. Outrageous. Marty, stay on the line. We'll get to you in just a second. Text coming in as well at 651-461-9226. Drive time back in a minute. Just this afternoon, prosecutors in Hennepin County and Minneapolis charged a U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agent in a shooting of a man in North Minneapolis. This turned out to be a case of mistaken identity, followed by a number of lies. And this isn't me saying it. This isn't just Mary Moriarty saying it. This also was a Trump administration official who is saying there's a chance this guy's going to be charged with perjury. False police report is what the charge is in Hennepin County, falsely reporting a crime, along with four counts of second degree assault with a deadly weapon. I am glad that Mary Moriarty and the State Bureau of Criminal Apprehension dedicated the time and the effort that they had to dedicate to this, because the Trump administration would not cooperate with the investigation. Outrageous. Outrageous. 651-461-9226. Marty is in Albert Lee. Marty, thanks for listening and for calling. You're on CCO. What do you think about all this?
But Jason, I'm right there with you. You know, I've called in before. We're pretty close on this. Law enforcement, I have a brother that's in the sheriff's department. Law enforcement needs to be held to a higher state of consciousness and a higher accountability when they break the law. Because when law enforcement breaks the law like this, they make the job that much harder for law enforcement that is doing their job correctly. Yeah. And as we know, this is just wrong on so many levels. This guy should never be able to hold a position authority or law enforcement again in his life for abusing that privilege.
Yeah, and you raise a point that I think is critical, Marty, that I really believe that 95 to 99% of law enforcement officers do an incredible job day in and day out. And I do think we need to have... I don't like this more recent development that if you screw up on the job, it's criminal charges or nothing. I feel like there has to be some other sort of discipline, because you run the risk that nobody wants to be a cop. If you worry that you screw up on the job, now you're going to prison for 10 years. That said, like, sometimes it's so egregious that you have to be held to that higher level of account, lest you embarrass and besmirch the good reputation of everybody else who's trying to do things right.
Agreed.
Thanks, Marty. Appreciate the call. Lots of texts coming in. Jason, I've nearly always been disappointed in Mary Moriarty's job performance, but she got it right this time, says the texter. Jason, you're right on. The charges brought against the officer should have been done much sooner, but no time like the present. The ICE under Kristi Noem was a disaster. Dangerous time. Cops don't have complete immunity, nor do ICE agents, says another texter. The Trump administration tried to tell them that they do. Now, I do think that people should not take this case as like, OK, now when are we going to get the ICE agent who killed Renee Good? And when are we going to get the ICE agent who killed Alex Pretty? Both of those cases are going to be much more difficult to prove in a court of law. I just think they are. They happened quickly. I go back and forth. I can convince myself on either of those cases that the ICE agent should be charged. What I think as a citizen and a voter you should be most concerned about is the fact that the federal government Not only did they come into our community and act like thugs on the street, then they shut down the investigation of it. How do you defend that? How do you stand up and say, yes, that is exactly what should have happened? How do you defend it? You cannot defend it. Now, I'm sitting here saying I'm not sure that the agents involved in the shooting of Rene Good and Alex Preddy should be charged. I'm not sure. But I am sure that you should have had a full and complete investigation. And if the federal government gave a rip about justice and fairness and the law and their reputation, they would have conducted an investigation and invited the state to join them the way that it's always been done.
So basically what you're saying is this could have been done and still can be done the easy way, but because, like you said at the beginning of the show, it shouldn't have taken this long to get to from A to B with one investigation, let alone numerous, but because, you know, people like Mary Moriarty and others are having to really dig a lot of deep holes in different places to try and find evidence and trying to find, you know, the full story. This is kind of the ramifications and the consequences of, you know, shutting out the state level enforcement when it comes to this.
There just should have been a full investigation. Yeah. Now, there are those who will defend the ICE agents and say that they were doing their job. And I'm not convicting this guy. I'm saying there is enough evidence for me to say this should go to a trial. Mm-hmm. We'll see what a judge thinks. I'm just a radio host.
Yeah.
One of our frequent conservative commentators on our YouTube channel with a username that I cannot say says, well, this is a shock. Jason giving kudos to an embarrassment of a lame duck's county attorney and the most unqualified and crooked attorney general in our state's history. Castro is a hero, along with the other two agents. It takes an impressive amount of delusion to look at what this ICE agent is accused of doing and say that he's a hero. It is possible that this agent has been a hero in other parts of his career, in other parts of his job. I don't know. I am saying, are you a hero when you claim that you were beaten by a shovel and a broom, you go to a hospital in Cambridge, have a full medical workup, which found nothing but a bruise on your thumb. Oh, you were hitting the head. Really? Really? And then there's video evidence that shows every version of your story was a lie. Real hero. Real. That's not heroic.
Not necessarily the shooting. It's the lying and trying to backtrack following said event.
That
much worse.
Look, if you came forward and said, man, things were chaotic, got a little out of control.
Let the investigation play out and see what happens. But don't double down on it. And then...
By the way, the evidence is that the Minneapolis man here, Julio Sosa Solis, that he was running into a house when they shot at him, which is also against any sort of good police procedure.
Mm.
This guy had no weapon. He was not a threat. And in fact, he was not the guy that they thought they were looking for.
Yeah. So much for the worst of the worst.
Yeah. Just the whole thing was a debacle. It didn't have to be. You could have done it the Tom Holman way from the beginning.
Mm.
And today, if we did things the way Tom Holman wanted to do it, not the Christy Noem, Greg Bovino way, if we did it the Holman way, I think we would be having much different conversations here. Then the idea that, citizens were intervening in law enforcement work. Yeah, I'd be much more sympathetic to that viewpoint. That's where I was leaning at the beginning of this process until we saw what those ICE agents were doing. And how did we see it? Because of citizens who were being annoying, but they were documenting it and they showed us and they showed the country and the world this out of control federal force that left Minnesota because people stood up. We're going to break. You want to talk heroic? what's going on in the North Shore of Minnesota, Lakes Country, wildfires hitting. Boy, some of this footage is horrifying. But heroic action on the front line. We're going to get an update from up in that region. We'll do it live over video link up. Isaiah Mengen from Lakes Area Heroes is going to join us in just a minute. So check it out on the YouTube stream. Just search WCCO Radio. Boy, these fires in northern Minnesota have been sad to watch. There's a fire near Two Harbors, another in Crow Wing County. And one, the one near Two Fires, Minnesota Incident Command is saying was because of a downed power line. All the winds so dry up there. But this other fire is in an area of Minnesota where so many of our Twin Cities residents have cabins. It's part of the state I love so much, Crow Wing County. Started on Saturday. And so we wanted to get an update from a guy who's really just been doing incredible work, sharing stories, especially of the first responders that are in the Lakes area. And Isaiah Moengen from Lakes Area Heroes is with us via video link up right now. Isaiah, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for the invite. I'm psyched to be here.
Tell me, first of all, tell me kind of how your chronicling of this and chronicling of the incredible work firefighters have been doing up there started.
It's a great question. I mean, my organization supports our local heroes, our local first responders and firefighters in Crow Wing County and the four county area here up north, and the community supports us so we can do that. So when these fires started and the community started reaching out and saying that they wanted to help, you know, we jumped into action.
You guys honor law enforcement, EMS, all sorts of first responders, giving back to support them and help them out. Tell me a little bit, you know, down here in the Twin Cities, honestly, everywhere in Minnesota, I think, is pretty familiar with a volunteer firefighter culture because it's so common across this state.
Yep.
But the men and women who are out fighting these wildfires right now, a lot of them are in fact, volunteers, right?
Absolutely. I would say probably over 90%. I don't know for sure, but most of them are volunteer. Most of them are taking time away from their families to come fight these fires for their neighbors, and the mutual aid effort has been incredible from departments all over the state. We actually had crews from our county, from Crow Wing County, that were in Two Harbors fighting fires Friday night.
Oh, wow.
And Saturday. And then they got called back to these fires home. So they got about 2 hours of sleep and then came here and went right to work on these fires because they were absolutely insane. And then, you know, we stepped in Saturday afternoon to help, you know, take care of them on site here.
Isaiah Moengen is with Lakes Area Heroes, and he's been posting sort of updates from the front lines and also the way businesses have been stepping up to kind of support some of those first responders, too. Just from a personal level, Isaiah, like, how bad are the fires? What's your response and your reaction been being close to this?
Yeah, I mean, I live in Cross Lake. I'm a resident here pretty much all my life, and it was pretty scary to see the plumes and the smoke cloud. My wife was on her way home from work and said, oh, my gosh, are you seeing this? This is insane. And then we were, you know, just like any other Saturday morning, doing the honeydew list, you know, clean out the shop, and we saw the fire, the planes coming around, and it was like, are we in a war zone, or what's going on here? And then it was like, yep, my phone started ringing, and it didn't stop, and it hasn't, which is so cool.
The response is always amazing when we look at the number, the containment, the latest as those burn, and we'll get an update in the next 20 minutes in our local news here. But we're talking about, like, sort of to the east of Breezy Point, that area where I saw some pictures of the fire sort of jumping the highway, which was pretty freaky stuff as you watch. I mean, this stuff is so unpredictable, and it has been so dry up there, hasn't it?
It has. It's really been dry.
Yeah. Isaiah Moengen is with us. Did you get any rain in the overnight like we did down here in the city?
Not much. We got a little bit. Yeah, it was a little damp this morning, but it wasn't nearly enough as we needed.
What, you know, and the response, and is it mostly Facebook where people have been mobilizing and supporting you guys?
Not necessarily. I mean, obviously, there's an incredible response on social media and Facebook and Instagram. But honestly, it's just been people, you know, messaging us, calling me directly. You know, the incident command is directing all the public to reach out to myself so I can make sure to filter the community coming in and delivering supplies and goodies. The state fire marshal actually got a little... He had to come chat with me yesterday.
Guys, I've been inundated with messages and calls.
At some point, it was insane.
Yeah, I was just...
We are out here...
I'm going to play a little bit of one of these videos you posted. Here
Please
we
do.
Go. We're
on County Road 11, delivering burgers and hot dogs. Check out this. The back is absolutely full of the fleet vehicle. Tyler, what are you doing?
Hey, we're giving out some stuff.
We've got chips. We've got goodies.
It's pretty cool, like just seeing the response and seeing all of the donations that you guys have been getting too. What sort of stuff have you seen from businesses and from residents up there?
So cool. We had, you know, MN Traders Co. donated coffee the last couple of days. We've had Mission Tavern, Rafferty's Pizza, Mossieri's, Grandview Lodge showed up with some ribs and smoked hot dogs. Ann W was that first night, she made like 200 plus cheeseburgers and hot dogs for us to run out, and we had them in hot coolers so they were eating a hot meal. I mean, these local businesses, and everyone keeps asking how they can support us. Go support those businesses. When you guys come up north, come support these businesses, because they kept dropping off food and I kept trying to give them money or reimburse them, and they accepting it. They said, nope, this is us returning the favor to them. And they are so thankful that we're here to be able to provide this hot food for these heroes when they're on the ground.
Isaiah Moengen from Lakes Area Heroes is with us. What do you want people to know about, you know, your part of the state and sort of the, you know, the resilience and the ability to step up and jump in when you have a time of crisis like this?
The Brainerd Lakes area supports our heroes, our law enforcement, our first responders, our firefighters fearlessly. And they have been looking for a way to do that for many years, and this just shows it. This community loves our heroes and appreciates them because they are the community. Mm. These are the people that I've had that own businesses and own restaurants, and they are absolutely incredible, and they're going to be here every day until it's taken care of.
Pretty cool. Really appreciate sort of the grassroots effort that you and your neighbors and the businesses have put together to support those folks, because, man, fighting a wildfire is exhausting because it does not end. You do not know when it's going to move and jump and the wind is going to shift. And you know that you are trying to protect something that's so important to people, which is their home. I mean, it's emotional work, Isaiah. Isaiah Moeng
showed up in droves to help out. It's so cool. Even some of the farmers, you know, all their friends showed up with trailers, loading up all the livestock and getting their horses out to make sure they're protected.
You can go to the website, lakesareaheroes.com. There's a spot on there where you can donate. But as Isaiah said, just supporting those businesses who, you know, have helped out is pretty cool too. Isaiah, thank you. And let all the firefighters and the families of the firefighters who might be listening or watching this, that we appreciate them.
Yeah. Thank you, Jason.
Pretty cool. 3:46. That's Isaiah Moengen with us here on Drive Time with DeRussia. We're going to break. In a minute, I want to talk about Art of Whirl, because it was like the state fair was happening in Northeast Minneapolis this weekend. It was unlike anything I've seen in a while. That plus the NFL draft. Are we going to be optimistic about the city of Minneapolis? We're going to try our hardest when we come back. This weekend had me feeling optimistic about summer in the cities. Two things that I did. Followed by some news today has me feeling great about Minneapolis. And I'd love to know where you are on this. Part of it for me is that you got to keep experiencing stuff. You have to keep going out, coming to places, and reevaluating, right? And so I know we're going to get the crime, I'm never coming to the city, blah, blah, blah text. And I get it. Like, crime was really bad. And crime is still worse than it was before COVID. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to be at zero crime. And so you have to decide for yourself, is the fun, is the uniqueness worth the risk? I tend to think the risk, especially during the day, is so low. So, Sam, the college kid, is back in town. Sam, Alyssa, and I went to Artaworld in northeast Minneapolis. And Artaworld used to be a pretty chill event where you'd wander through Northrop King building. Artists would have wine. They used to have wine and beer and stuff in their room, and you'd have like a little taster, and you'd get to talk to an artist, and it was awesome. And we bought, I love buying art from Minnesota artists. We bought plenty of pieces over the years. We don't normally go on Saturday, but it was so dang nice on Saturday. It was like 80 degrees. We're like, let's go. So we, Sam, Alyssa, and I come in from Maple Grove. Went to lunch at Maya Cuisine right on Central. Wow. Fantastic. Mm. Walked to the Thorpe Building, Casket Arts, what's the building that Indeed Brewery is in? I don't know. That one. Went to a place called Q Arma across from Earl Giles. Amazing. Amazing experience. And in fact, it felt like the State Fair. The street where Indeed, so like Indeed and Centro and Earl Giles, that whole complex, the Solar Arts Building.
Oh, got it.
Solar Arts Building. That whole street was shut down, and there were wall-to-wall people. It was awesome. Everybody was walking around, all from like near Holy Land on Central all the way down to like where Northrop King and Earl Giles and Minnesota Nice Cream. It was so cool. Then Sunday, I went to the Twins game where I got to throw out the first pitch, but I let my nephew do it, Matthew. Because it's kids' day, and nobody needs to see me screw up throwing out the first pitch. And being at Target Field was so fun. Now, the reason Target Field was so fun was Milwaukee Brewer fans. Thank you, Milwaukee Brewer fans.
Yeah,
for coming to our city, we appreciate you. But it was fun.
Yeah.
So what, I guess what I'm suggesting is there is fun to be had.
Mm-hmm.
There's fun to be had. And then today you learn that the NFL draft is going to be here, right in the back of US Bank Stadium. It's ESPN reporting that. Fun stuff.
It's all happening, Jason. It's all coming together.
It's sort of how I felt.
Yeah.
Like, it was just a great vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And a little bit of a reminder for me that when people feel kind of hinky about being in the city, a lot of it is because of a lack of people.
Yeah.
Right? And so whenever I feel downtown a little bit like, it's a little, it's because no one's here. So more events, I think. Like, that's just going to be the solution. So don't cheat yourself.
SummerSlam this summer. It's kind of
SummerSlam is going to be huge. It's going to be huge. Continental Diamond Time Check. It's 3:58. Back with Joe Tamburino and the latest on our breaking news ICE agent charged by Hennepin County next. All right, you heard the big news from Laura. It's making national news. Very unusual when a local law enforcement group or local prosecutors charge a federal agent. You have jurisdictional issues. You have obviously the usual issues that are involved when you're talking about a law enforcement agent in the commission of their duties when it comes to trying to figure out, all right, is there a case or not? That's really the question I had. My initial reaction, you can listen back to it on the podcast. Just search Drive Time with DeRussia, or you can rewind the video on Facebook or on YouTube on the WCCO radio channels. But my initial reaction is that just because the federal government is going to obstruct and not assist in the investigation the way that they always have done with the state of Minnesota doesn't mean that we shouldn't prosecute if we think there is a reason to do so. Joe Tamburino has been studying the criminal complaints, has listened to what County Attorney Mary Moriarty has said, and he joins us in studio today. Joe, it's good to see you.
Nice seeing you.
This is unusual, right? I mean, it's first of all, it's unusual when a law enforcement officer gets charged in general, I think.
Yes, it's very unusual, and I've only seen this once before here locally, and that just happened a month ago when the Hennepin County Attorney's Office charged Gregory Morgan, another ICE agent, in that issue of a second-degree assault, a road rage-type thing on the freeway. Now, there's still an active warrant for him. It's been out since April 16th nationwide, and there's been no progress on that case, but that's the only other time of recent memory.
All right, so let's give people sort of the scenario here, at least the facts as we know it. Because the initial story, and I think a lot of you remember it because it was a colorful story. This story that an ICE agent was being attacked by a couple of guys using a broom and a shovel. Bear in mind, this was January 14th. It was cold. It was winter. And the idea of a couple of illegal immigrants beating the crap out of an ICE agent with a shovel and a broom is sort of like, you say, well, they're probably going to shoot. I mean, I don't, you know, I think that's a reasonable reaction a lot of people would have. Except the story fell apart. And it's not just the Hennepin County attorney who is saying these guys were lying. It was a federal judge who threw out the charges against Julio Sosa Solis, the North Minneapolis man, and his roommate, Alfredo Alyorna. They were initially charged with assaulting a federal officer. Joe, the story has fallen apart. So much to the point where members of the Trump administration were saying, like, there's a chance these guys are going to be charged with perjury for lying about what happened. So that's sort of the background. What, when you look at these charges, I guess the first question is, if you, before we get into jurisdiction and whether we'll be able to do anything, is there a case here in a law enforcement officer lying and then also, you know, the use of force in this case where it seems like Solis Sosa was on his, at least he was fleeing. He was shot running away.
Yes. I mean, when you just look at the complaint, sure, there is a case. And out of all of the situations, unfortunate situations by far that have transpired here in Minnesota with ICE, this has the most ammunition for the state to bring charges. There's no doubt about that. For the reasons that you have stated, which is, I mean, they charged the victims in federal court, and then in February, those charges were dismissed. And you're right. People from the Trump administration are saying they're going to look at this officer with some type of perjury charge.
This is pretty bad. This is not like right. What you would expect like a Minnesota state trooper to be doing, you know?
That's right. And the other thing that the state has is they have some partial investigation that was doing a joint investigation with the federal government.
That was fascinating.
Right.
And this became a flashpoint, right? That the Trump administration shut down any sort of joint administrations. In according to this criminal complaint, you see when it was shut down because they started doing an interview of one of the ICE agents, right?
That's right. So the other part that's broken to the state's favor is that broke away to the state's favor, that is that there was a joint investigation, at least to some degree here. The other aspect,
it looks like it lasted 12 minutes or something. But they have something together, which is
that's right. That's amazing. Right. And the other aspect of this is they have recordings and they have ShotSpotter. And here's the irony of this, Jason. It was only, I think, last year in our city council that they were talking about how they should do away with ShotSpotter. There were all these objections from the left about ShotSpotter.
The left has been very against ShotSpotter. And ShotSpotter, for people who don't know, is sort of an audio technology that it's not perfect, but it does give dispatchers sort of a first warning of like, hey, sounds like a shot was fired here. Might be a firecracker, but it's pretty good at the AI now. It's pretty good at ferreting that stuff out.
That's right. There have been objections from the left about ShotSpotter, as well as all the cameras on the street. Right. Well, this
privacy
case,
and why are you putting them all in the black neighborhoods? And
yes, yeah. And so, but this case is taking ShotSpotter and the videos from the street and using it to prosecute a federal official. Mm. So, you know, these tools of investigation are important. And they're using them in this case.
One of the things I found interesting as we talked with our legal analyst, criminal defense attorney Joe Tamburino, is that the call. So step one is a shot spotter. Step two is a 911 call that comes from a Minneapolis police officer. Step three is the dispatcher turning the camera that they had in this area towards the house. And that camera picked up pretty much everything in a time that the ICE agents did not have body worn cameras.
That's right.
Nor do we know that it would be turned over even if they had it, I guess, the way that things are going.
Well, that question is a really good question, which is even if the ICE agents had body worn cameras, would they have been turned over to the state? My guess is they would not have been. But these cameras that are on the streets, you know, you and I can't jump on them and, you know, start turning them left and right or up and down. But the police can. And this is why they're important. They're cameras that are on a public street. When you walk on a public street, there is very little right to privacy because you're in the open air. Same thing with the ShotSpotter. So, you know, out
sort
of all
great
the cases,
work by the dispatcher, too, to like recognize like, oh, we got a camera over there. Let's turn it.
That's right. So out of all the cases that have come forth, they've got the best ammunition in this one. They being the local prosecutors.
I suspect there's a but. Is there a but?
Yeah, there is a but. There's a couple of big buts. So, yeah, there's a few of them. Number one is this whole nationwide warrant. All that means is that there's an active warrant that could be executed in all 50 states and U.S. territories.
Aren't all warrants that?
Most are. You don't have to do. You could do an in-state
warrant.
Sounds
good, though, doesn't it?
It does sound good.
Yes.
So, you know.
Did they issue an APB? Can we put out all of the, like, cool catchphrases?
That's right. Yeah. Everything from TV.
Doesn't matter.
And like I mentioned in that other case, there's been an active warrant out for that individual for over a month.
Yeah.
So that's
number one.
You got
to know where the person is and go get them, right?
I would imagine these are ICE agents. People know where they are. I mean, I don't think they're hiding underground. So number one about the warrant. Number two is as soon as this person goes to court here, being in Hennepin County, I would imagine his attorney is going to remove this to federal court, which is his right. And then number three, once he gets into federal court, he will make a motion to dismiss under the Supremacy Clause, specifically under a U.S. Supreme Court case called Nagel, I believe from 1880. That basically says this in a nutshell. If a federal official was working within the color of their duty, the scope of their duty, the state can't prosecute them. So this is in for a long haul of litigation.
And
those are the buts.
That last but is a big one for all of the cases that I think many people in Minnesota would like to see at least a court process on, right?
That's right.
The shooting of Alex Preddy, the shooting of Renee Good. Those cases, to me, as a layman, are actually more challenging to get a guilty verdict for, because if you want to talk about being in the throes of their job, like those were very much sort of there are a lot of questions to ask about the police work that was used there. But with Renee Good, you're like, well, I don't know. You can talk yourself into a justification for that. Alex Preddy, even it all happened very, very quickly. And you could say like, the fact that one officer yelled that he had a gun, even though the gun was pulled off of Alex Preddy at the time the shots were fired, it's a matter of less than a second.
Right. Right. And with those two cases,
just tougher cases is all I'm saying.
They are. And with those two cases, you're not even going to get this far right now because the federal government was not cooperating at all on those cases. And they are quite different in this case, because in this case, if everything pans out as the way the complaint says it does, and we've seen the video, you have an officer shooting into a house, presumably with a closed door. So, you know, I mean, it's a totally different factual scenario. That's why I stated this case has the best legs to advance on.
It's all super interesting. I mean, I am a little disgusted that, like, we had to go through major investigatory techniques to even figure out the name of this guy. I just think this is not how we want justice. Any good law enforcement officer, this isn't how you would want it to be done, the way that the federal government has decided that this had to go.
And especially with the lack of cooperation, because, you know, I mean, when the federal government says, we're just not going to give you any information, it's very hard to force them to do otherwise.
Yeah.
Very hard. And the only time we've ever seen this kind of a case or this kind of a, you know, procedure is when we think back to the Ruby Ridge incident back in 1990. I mean, those who are old enough to remember that, in that case, you had federal agents storming basically a local guy there for weapons charges. And then a shootout happened. And obviously some federal officials died, and then the victims died on the civilian side. But there was a whole process there about this same issue, which is the Supremacy Clause, removing it to the federal courts. So we're going to see that play out here, too.
Do you expect a charge in the Preddy or the Good shootings?
I would right now say no. I would be surprised, only because, again, there hasn't been a peep as to whether or not there would be any shared information. Yeah. I mean, think about it this
hard,
way.
Hard to reconstruct that. Well, the BCA did a lot of work to reconstruct this, and they had a lot to work with.
Well, remember, even in the Preddy case, BCA wasn't allowed even on the scene.
On the scene. Yeah.
So I don't see how you're going to be able to charge anyone, let alone a police officer, when there is a dearth of investigative material. I mean, how do you get past probable cause? Even if you decide to charge by complaint, there's no grand jury, and you walk into court as a prosecutor, the defense attorney is surely going to argue that we know, just based on public information, there's a whole wealth of information out there in this investigation that the prosecutor does not have, which means there could be some exculpatory evidence and no probable cause, and you could see what happens.
Joe Tamburino, great stuff. Appreciate the insight in real time. This breaking story just this afternoon. I know you came right from court too. So
yeah,
thank
I did.
You.
No problem.
You know, that's why you got to watch on the stream. You can see Joe's nice suit. You can tell it's a court day.
It's a court day.
Joe Tamburino with us here on Drive
Time.
Thank
you.
We're going to break in just a minute. Another Minnesota company telling workers, get off your couch and come into the office. How are you guys feeling about the shift? We'll talk about it when we come back here on Drive Time. Get back to work. Is anyone surprised? Is anyone surprised? Did you guys really think that all of the bosses, when times got tough for their company, that they were all going to say, you know what? I love hybrid work. Come on. Bosses are going to boss. When times are tough, bosses like one thing, butts in seats. They want your butt in your seat. They want to walk down the cubicle farm and see Mary and Braden and Ramona, and they want to see you're working. Remote work. It was a good run. You guys enjoyed it. You got to go to work in your pajamas. You got to pretend that you were working on a long-term project when you were really taking a walk around the lake. General Mills is the latest to say, see you in the office. We'll see you in Golden Valley. Now, because our workers are incredible babies, General Mills going from 3 days to 4 days a week, effective, well, how long would you think? Josh is in for Dan today. Mm-hmm. So today is May 18th. You know, I get it. If you work from home 2 days a week, perhaps you have a nanny 3 days a week. So you might need a little time to figure out how to get a little extra child care on day four, right? Because I don't know what else the difference would be.
Yeah.
You got to maybe you got to pay for parking one more. Not at the General. Mm. They got a big old lot, big old
they
ramp.
They got you covered.
How you know when you think about it, Josh? Mm-hmm. How much time do you think people would need? It's May 18th. You're the CEO. We're going from 3 to 4 days. When would you make it effective? Don't overthink it. You're over
30.
30 days?
Give them a good cushion, but not too much. I don't know. It's not like you're learning to ride a bike again. You're doing the same thing. You're not going to go into a cubicle and be like, what is this? Where am I?
They are giving people until September 8th.
Okay.
September 8th. After Labor Day, you know.
What are you going to do with the other 3 months?
Well, they just keep doing what they're doing now, and they probably have the summer Fridays or whatever a lot of the companies have around here.
Yeah. That's a long time.
It's plenty of notice. It's because everybody is...
Look, like, just budgeting or what?
No, it's because people are incredible whiners about this. Josh, if you currently work from home 2 days a week, mm-hmm. you perceive that as a benefit of your employment. And when they call it to just one day, it feels like they've taken something from you. And so people lose their mind over it. They lose their mind over it. And my view has always been that the reason people fight so hard to hang on to the ability to work from home is because they're not really working that hard from home, that it's way easier than it was to go into work. And I think the corporate goons are correct that if you want to turn a company around, you need people to rally to the cause and you need them to be in the room where it happens. Now, Texter says, with gas prices high, wouldn't less people driving to work lower demand for gas and lead to lower prices? No.
Not really.
Because what happened over the last couple of years is not a reduction. There was a reduction in traffic congestion, mm-hmm. but not necessarily a reduction in the amount of time people are spending on the road. Because now you can go to your kids' choir practice or mm-hmm. choir performance, or you can go to track and field, or you can go to soccer, you can go to hockey, you can go to lunch with your mom, you can do other stuff.
Yeah.
Now a texter says that to add one extra day of daycare maybe is going to take 90 days. I was mostly kidding about the length of time. I had a child in daycare. Now, my child didn't go to creme de la creme, the daycare of the gods. Just went to a regular daycare. But I don't know. I think it's good, man. Get back to the office. You know what? If you want to weigh in, let's go. 651-461-9226. General Mills joins so many other companies, Target, Best Buy, Medtronic, among the companies that have said, nope, we got to come to work a little bit more. People are calling in, so let's do it. We'll break, and then we'll hear from you. I want people back in the office. I think it's better for community. It's better for the workplace. And frankly, I think it's better for a lot of people who have become absolute weirdos because they have no social interaction with other people. So there, if that doesn't get people to call in, I think you know where I feel. I've worked from home. Drive time back. I love if you listen to me if you're at home, though. That's fine. We're back in a minute. So texters are all over the place. 651-461-9226. I want people to go back to the office. I believe it's better for the company. And frankly, I think it's better for most people. I believe that work from home has taken people who are already weirdos and made them incredible weirdos. Isolation is not good for anyone. And work is one of the only places in the world where you end up sitting next to and working with people who disagree with your outlook on life. We have siloed ourselves into neighborhoods where everyone we live with thinks like us. Everyone we socially hang out with thinks like us. But when you go to the workplace, you don't know what sort of weird stuff margin accounting is into and thinking about and talking about.
Yeah.
And sometimes a little bit of cross-pollination into other people's weird world makes us all a little more empathetic, understanding. I think it's good. It's good.
Did you see those skyways today? Pretty busy.
Pretty busy.
Yeah.
Now, I get that going from hybrid, where you're working from home 2 days a week, to only working from home 1 day a week, is a bit of a challenge. So if you have 3 days of daycare, and maybe you let the kid hang out at home while you were at home on 1 day, and now you need 4 days. And so you get 3 months to figure it out. If you cannot figure it out in 3 months, I mean, especially at General Mills, where they have, they have like a partner, there's some stuff. Now, a lot of you are saying, I'll read some of these texts. Why is it that the work from home crowd only texts and doesn't call? I'm just saying.
Poking the bear, Jason.
I think if you could face the facts, you would admit it. That the people who have turned work from home into a religion are weird. And they like it, and they want to be alone, and they don't like other people, and they don't like other noises. And I say, we don't really care. We've pretended to care for a couple of years, and you knew that no one really cared. And it's going to be good for you. It's going to be good for you. And you can make it weird. If you're a weirdo and you want to make it weird at work, I feel that that should be your right. That should be your gift. That should be your joy. But if you are already hybrid 3 days a week, going from three to four, and you're complaining, I don't know. You had a good run. It was a good run. Texter, sorry, Hennepin County is not coming back downtown like Fry wants. They've sold property and there is not enough office space anymore. Hennepin County is number one on my hit list of who I'm ticked off about when it comes to working from home. Hennepin County absolutely let down the taxpayers of Hennepin County by deciding that now 5 years post-COVID, that it's an efficient way to serve the public by having people at home and not having service windows open and delaying trying to get permits and inspections and licenses. It's insane.
Sounds pretty lazy to me.
I think it's insane. Texture, focus on output, not input. Well, these companies are focusing on output. I think there are some people who can work more efficiently at home. There are. And if I were a manager, what I would try to take from this work from home era is the fact that people want more flexibility. They want more flexibility. And I think bosses need to not be such a pain in the butt, and they need to not be so like, oh, why are you leaving early? Like, if you're an employee that I trust is doing good work and you want to leave early, you should leave early. That's what I think. Now, Andrew and I think, are aligned. Working at home is a privilege, and in-office workers should be compensated. People that work from home have built-in daycare or can go to the doctor's office in the middle of the day without taking off. I would have preferred to see workplaces 2 years ago say, hey, we're going to have a hybrid work environment, but if you come to work 4 days a week, we're going to give you a 5% pay bump. And if you come to work 5 days a week, we're going to give you a 7% pay bump. And so you're incentivizing people to come in. I think that would have been better than this way where now, you know, oh, no.
But What is the end game? What is the end game slash benefit, I guess, of being in office compared? Like, I feel like the compensation would be a very unfair step to take, because what is, I guess, what are they looking for in office that they, besides the obvious of not being able to monitor them frequently at home? Like, what, like, is
why, why does the company want them in office? Like,
I guess I'm not understanding why that would be an incentive.
Well, it's because you can't let, now look, if you're a computer coder and you just work alone and you just do your thing, mm-hmm. or your accounts payable, maybe it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But for many jobs, the sort of camaraderie that you get.
Got it.
The, you know, companies always bring up this, like, well, you know, sometimes great ideas happen through accidental conversations. I do think if you're trying to grow and learn and advance and become a leader, you need to actually see someone being a leader.
Yeah. No, and I see that. I didn't know if maybe it was something outside of that. The camaraderie, the conversations, that's obvious, but yeah. Okay.
That's, you know, they'll say some of this stuff, but that's, Texter, over the last 5,000 years, most people work from home. They were farmers. I do think government should be in office. Well, yeah, yeah. And how many weird farmers do you know? So isolated.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you. Any municipal employee should have to work in their associated downtown and support the economy, says a texter. State's AG office got rid of a third of their office space. Now they don't have enough space for everyone if all were needed in the office. Guys, let me tell you, just like you got rid of office space, you can find new office space, and you could probably get it at a hell of a deal right now. Everyone is all of a sudden very worried about the amount of square footage their employer has. Yeah. We've got like a whole cadre of commercial real estate people out there now. Very, very nervous. Come on. This is a good point. General Mills is a manufacturer of food. All those people who manufacture the food have been working 5 days a week at the plant. Since COVID, through COVID, these corporate people are just whiners.
Mm-hmm.
I do think a lot that there, I think it was Graco, there was a company very early on where they said, you know, most of our workers are in plants, mm-hmm. manufacturing plants. If I were a CEO and my company was on the backbone of my company, was blue-collar workers in plants, you better believe I would make my pencil pushers show up to be in office in solidarity.
Yeah.
And yes, you probably... Now, would I give you flexibility? Absolutely. You'd have flexibility to go to the doctor, go to your kid's sports. If your kid's soccer starts at 4 o'clock, go to your kid's soccer. I am confident that if you hire the right people, they're going to do the work.
Mm.
Right? Give that flexibility. But this idea that everybody should be hybrid or, oh, just measure that, like, come on. I guess now seek that out if that's important to you as a worker.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, I welcome the corporate goons doing the right thing and making people come back to work. Drive Time, going to take a break. The texters are not with me. I think they mostly don't like that I said people are weirdos.
Yeah. There's worse things.
It's the silent majority out there that's like, you know what? I thought all those people were weirdos too.
Yeah.
We're back in a minute to talk about the final week of Stephen Colbert. Late night TV, put a fork in it. I think it's over, and it's been over for a while. We'll talk about that when we come back. So yesterday I'm at the Twins game, walking with my nephew, Matthew, and a Drive Time with DeRusha listener comes up and says, hey, Jason, I really like listening to your show. I listen all the time. And my nephew, who is 12, says, after I thank him for listening and, you know, we had a nice little conversation, Matthew says, is this what it's like to be famous?
How about that?
Yes. That's it. Honestly, that's all it is. You're at a Twins game. And I said, I'm like, Matthew, the best part about this is that most of the time in life, no one's ever going to tell you you're doing a good job. No one. Mm. And so I am lucky enough that every once in a while, people do. Super nice.
Yeah.
I think it's super. I've been doing this for more than 30 years, and it never gets old to have a stranger come up and be like, hey, I like what you're doing.
Can't wait for my first time.
It's pretty good, Josh. If you see Josh Wheeler out in public, you tell him he did a great job.
Speaking of the Twins game, I do have to pivot here. I'm going to play this little tidbit here. This song happened to play on the big Jumbotron, and certain somebody is also famous for this.
Yeah, that is true. So look, I am very serious about Twins karaoke.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're watching on our live stream right now, you can see an image that one of our listeners, Gabriel, captured on the Jumbotron. Why was he recording during the Twins sing-along? I don't know. But I go all in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to sing. Don't you think it's lame when you see people on the big screen and they're not going for it? Shouldn't you go for it?
Yeah, 100%.
Have some fun. Now, if you're on Kiss Cam with your wife, do you go for it? How hard do you
As long as you're sure it's your wife, there's been many opportunities where it is not, and that is where you kind of have to pan the camera.
I do love that. I love that. I think the crowd loves it. When there's some uncertainty where you get the three shot, there's a gal on either side, and you're like, I don't know.
Brother, sister, yeah.
Right. I believe you should go all in. Now, Kiss Cam, I don't think Alyssa and I have ever been on Kiss Cam. Mm. Maybe I should I rig that? I could probably set it up.
Go tonight. Tonight. It happen. Kiss in the rain.
Tonight there's a decent chance that everyone there will be on Kiss Cam.
Yeah.
I had such a good time at the game. It was a beautiful day. And I wish we would play the Milwaukee Brewers all the time.
Oh, wow.
I'll tell you that much, because all of the Western Wisconsin Brewer fandom, they show up. And then people come from Milwaukee and Madison and all over the state. Fun. And it just was great. It was a great environment. Do I like it when our home stadium has people singing Roll Out the Barrels after we finish the seventh inning stretch? Not particularly. Did my favorite moment, and then I actually do have topics and things to talk about them. But my favorite moment, where this thing went to a final out situation in the top of the ninth. Twins had the lead. Fans all around us. We were in section 122. So sort of left field, lower bowl. Great seats. But everyone around us was a Brewers fan. And so people started chanting, let's go Brewers, you know.
Yeah.
And there's about, this kid had to be like, I don't know, under 2 years old. And this adorable little kid just does the thumbs down as people are going, let's go Brewers. This Twins fan little kid, very, very little. It was the cutest thing ever. The kid was like,
it's been a lot through the 2 years.
No.
Yeah.
Thumbs down to the anti-cheering against the Brewers fans.
Been through a lot.
It's pretty good. Still going to a Twins game, man. It's still fun. I know, like, people have feelings, and I honor it.
Yeah.
But pretty good. Pretty good. All right. Lots of conversation in the show about Mary Moriarty filing charges against an ICE agent. I think it's great. Texter says, I wish Moriarty would pursue prosecution of gun crime individuals in Hennepin County. I do think it's fair to say, I wish we had a Hennepin County prosecutor that was more focused on prosecuting crime and less focused on the overall picture of justice. I get it. I get where people are coming from. I do think that, one, she's not running again.
Yeah.
In a way, I think there is a parallel to what's going on with Donald Trump. That Donald Trump has record low approval ratings that just came out today, 37%.
Yeah.
But just like Mary Moriarty does not need to care about what voters think, I also sort of think Donald Trump doesn't really need to care. He's not running again. If people don't approve of him, so what? It might hurt Republicans in the midterms, but it might not. I don't know that.
Are you telling me that the Trump 2028 stickers are a myth?
I don't believe it. I don't believe it. So when I look at what Mary Moriarty is doing, I think she is doing what she thinks is right and what she was elected to do. And I do think in this case, the ICE agent who was charged today has a lot to answer for, because, you know, Daniel Rosen, our U.S. attorney, filed after he saw the video that Minneapolis police had of what actually happened compared to what this ICE agent said happened. He immediately asked for the case to be dismissed with prejudice, meaning it can't be brought back ever again. So, you know, I think charging that ICE agent, it's a no-brainer. But if you want to hear more conversation about that podcast, it's available for you. Just search Drive Time with DeRussia, and you can find video. If you like consuming your podcast on YouTube, you can like and subscribe at WCCO Radio. Also, just launched over the weekend a TikTok page. Just search DeRussia Show. That's show clips only. So my regular TikTok will still be my regular nonsense, but a special TikTok just for the show. Fraud. I want to talk about fraud because the Star Tribune this weekend had a story that really in some ways confirmed a lot of reporting that has been out there in a number of different sources. And it's stuff that we've talked about for a while now. But for me, the biggest takeaway in this story that the Star Tribune, really an incredible investigative report, and it's part of why I subscribe to the Star Tribune. I know people have their feelings, but nobody can pull off a massive reporting project like they can. But what they found is that this Feeding Our Future scandal and the fraud was an open secret. And a bunch of records that they got found plenty of examples where officials could have taken action to prevent the fraud from happening, to stop the payments before more than $250 million from this federally funded child nutrition program was doled out by the state education department. Open secret. And what I am curious about, and I'd like your reaction at 651-461-9226. Do you think we've learned anything? Do you think that government today would prevent fraud before it happens at this level? Are we smarter? Are we more skeptical? And specifically around this number one issue, that the Democrats are working for these social service agencies, working for the Department of Education, working in the Walz administration, that they were afraid they were going to be called racist because most of the fraudulent operators who were applying for money that should have been going to feed children who didn't have access to school lunch and their usual nutrition because of COVID, they were mostly Somali. And in 2020, in 2021, if you are a Democrat in Minnesota, probably the worst thing that you could be accused of is being a racist. And I just wonder if are we in a better place? 651-461-9226. I have thoughts on that. I'd love to hear yours when we come back here on Drive Time. I do not believe that a fraudster today would get away with threatening a lawsuit and filing a lawsuit against the state of Minnesota, accusing the state of being racist. I think that will be the biggest takeaway and the biggest immediate change when it comes to fraud in Minnesota. Star Tribune reporting this weekend had three or four investigators who work for the state saying, yeah, we had some questions and we wanted to do site visits because these numbers weren't adding up. It grew too fast. It wasn't possible they were serving this many children. And they were told not to because all of those centers were run by Somali Americans and they didn't want to be accused of being racist. Now, it wasn't an unfounded fear because a white woman who was the ringleader of the Feeding Our Future fraudster operation, what did she do? She sued the state and accused it of being racist. We got to get over that. We got to get over it. There is real racism in our community. Don't get me wrong. Real racism is happening each and every day. But this is not the area you need to worry about that. We need to be able to investigate things without fear that you're going to be accused of being a racist. And frankly, if someone says, DeRussia, you're being racist, I don't care. I care about making sure that people in need get the benefits that they get and they should get. I care about those people. And I care about our dollars. And I care about the integrity of our government and the integrity of the whole system, which is that I'm willing to pay taxes because I believe that that money is going to be used for a greater good. Texter says, as a lifelong Democrat, I sure hope that we have learned a lesson, that we have oversight and things in place to not allow fraud to happen in future programs for the needy. On the other side of the aisle, had the Republicans been in power, they would have been very unlikely to have given anything to people in need. And that's also an extreme we don't want. I hope that Republicans don't take the lesson here to be, we don't need to help people who are poor. That's just not what I've heard. I do think something that I've heard more from people on the right is maybe we've gone too far in outsourcing programs that the government should be running to nonprofits and private industry. And I do think that's a real takeaway where you can say, if this is important enough for us to do as a government, maybe we should do it instead of having the federal money give the money to the state. The state gives the money to this nonprofit that's going to give the money then to these other people. There's just too many middlemen, too many places for fraud to start flying.
Yeah.
Let's go to the phones. Kevin's in Anoka. Kevin, do you think we're in a better place today when it comes to being more skeptical about fraud?
So a little quick explanation here.
Sure.
I don't care about baseball, basketball, football, or hockey. I've been paying attention to politics since Reagan's first administration. And for 60 years, I've been hearing about we're going to stop fraud. And since the 1960s, when we started the war on welfare, there's been no drop in the national poverty rate. 70% of what the government spends is on welfare. Think about a 70% size in reduction of the government and a 70% reduction in your taxes, and you could donate that money to whoever you want. At some point in time, after three generations, we have to admit it's not working, and the federal government or the state government is incapable of accomplishing this.
No. I don't disagree with you. I also would like to see, I also would like to believe that people would donate the money. But are people going to give the money?
The country donates more money than anybody on the planet. We donate billions of dollars every year. If your tax rate went from 40 down to 12% because you got rid of the welfare programs, you would have money to start a business and employ people. And you wouldn't have millions of federal workers.
Do you really believe, though, Kevin, that that's what people would do?
People already do it with the situation we have.
No, but the many of the people who are recipients of these programs are not people that are necessarily super employable by your dream company that some rich person's going to open up.
That's not my problem. If you don't want
to
work,
it's your problem.
If you to feed you,
yeah. I mean,
go live off of the trash in the back of a grocery store or get a job. I don't care. I'm sick of paying for generation upon generation to live on welfare. I personally know somebody who's on their third generation. Their family has not sustained a job in 40 years.
So what is your solution for those folks? Because they're not going to just disappear.
Stop feeding them. They'll go get a job. There's 5 million open jobs in this country right now.
No.
Walk into a Ford dealer and you can make $60,000 a year. There's 50,000 open service bays at your Ford dealer.
It's thank you, Kevin. Kevin and I have a different approach, but I do think Kevin is not wrong to say our approach in fighting poverty has not necessarily been effective. I think what Kevin ignores is that, yes, our population today is larger. We have, you know, the poverty rate is the same. So without those programs, would the poverty rate be much worse? I think it's likely. I think it's likely. It's difficult to track what is the benefit. When the poverty rate stays the same, and you look at that and say, well, we have failed. Well, without all of these programs, the poverty rate would have been much higher and higher and higher. So it's sort of a farcical way of looking at it.
Yeah.
That said, do I think that we've cracked the code? No. I hope all of the rich people with their big Trump tax cuts are writing big checks to charities that are doing the work and are showing the data and are getting results. Mm. I hope that's true. Let's go to Jeff. Jeff, you're on CCO.
Hey, Jason.
Hello. Go ahead.
Hey. I listened to the entire segment of this on Adam and Giordano this morning.
Mm, yeah.
And I have two points to make. One is the well-deserved reputation of lame-ass state employees. It's been that way for decades. They even laugh about it. I think they're aptly blamed. Secondly, some of the lower-level whistleblowers did run into pushback from their supervisors.
Yeah.
You're going to become labeled racist. We're not going to do anything with it. I don't know why somebody didn't pull up a big broom and start sweeping the floor and fire some of these SOBs.
Yeah.
I don't understand. There's not been one head rolled in all of this. I don't get it.
It's outrageous.
The whole thing just makes my blood boil.
Thanks, Chef. So, yep. Totally agree. Two notes. One, did Kevin say 70% of government spending is on welfare? Or you could cut that 70% cut? Mm. I don't know. Welfare, the biggest expense in our federal budget, I believe, is defense spending. These sort of social services, human services programs are somewhere between like 7 and 15%, unless he was counting bogus, unless he was counting Social Security. I don't know exactly what he's talking about there. Even in Minnesota, the social services programs, like, for example, I think a lot of people think the state pays for hunger relief, mm-hmm. and they barely. It's mostly people making donations and companies. So anyway, I did want to just call that out. Education budget. When you look at the state, welfare is not a huge percentage either.
Yeah.
Is it a lot of money, though? Yes.
Yes.
Is it fair to say, are we getting results? Are there different ways we could try to lift people out of poverty? Absolutely. Now, if your solution is pull the plug on all of these benefits and go into the Ford dealer,
Go starve.
You can't just walk off.
Gotta let them go hungry.
That's a little preposterous. But there is an academic conversation about, does welfare, does it help people in the long term? Mm. The safety net, or does it provide a disincentive to choose a better life?
Yeah.
So maybe that's the thing. Let's break. We got to go. Let's get to Dave Schwartz. We're going to talk some sports. We'll talk about the NFL draft coming to Minneapolis, and we'll talk about the way the Wolves and Wild ended their seasons when we come back. Dave Schwartz is with us. Dave, I want to start in kind of a good news piece, I think, for the Twin Cities, especially Minneapolis, the fact that the NFL draft is going to be coming here in 2028. It's a long way away, but we know, I mean, the NFL draft has become such an event.
It really has. I mean, nobody knows how to dominate a calendar like the National Football League. I mean, they have it perfected. Everything that they do is big television, but they make it a fan component. And so it whatever they throw at the wall sticks. And so this is a great thing for Minneapolis. It's a great thing to have the NFL draft here. It will be exciting. U.S. Bank Stadium. I mean, this is why. This was part of the whole promise of getting the stadiums, big events like this, getting the, you know, they got the Super Bowl, now the NFL draft and things. So this is what it is all about, why you put this kind of stadium and these kind of funds behind a stadium. So it's a good thing. It's exciting. And, you know, football fans will get the chance to come boo Roger Goodell in person for once.
Which is nice.
That's a good thing.
It's just a nice thing, for sure. For sure.
Although we're Minnesota nice, we probably won't. We'll probably cheer him, and then to our friends, we'll be like, "Oh, he's."
I don't know. Football fans, I feel like, are not known for holding back.
They are not known for holding back. You're right, and it's kind of become this. I mean, I'll give Goodell credit. He leans into it, right? He loves to be booed. It's fun. He doesn't mind being hated because he's doing his job very well, and he's getting paid handsomely for it, so it's not a bad gig.
You know, speaking of people being hated, two issues in the NBA over the weekend, one ant-related, one related to the revealing of the MVP for the NBA. Mm. But let's start with the Anthony Edwards, because obviously both the Timberwolves and the Wild, the way they ended their seasons, left a lot to be desired, I think. The Wild was maybe more painful. The Wolves was more infuriating, right? Yeah. But there's been this sort of sub-controversy about Anthony Edwards with like 8 minutes left in the game,
yeah,
going over and dapping up the San Antonio Spurs. Does this outrage you? Where are you at on this?
I don't know if I'd go all the way to outrage, but I did hear about it. I did see it. And it is very counter what Anthony Edwards is usually all about, which is, I'm never going to take a day off. I'm going to play through everything. I'm going to fight till my last dying breath kind of attitude. Now, there is a portion in sports where there is a time to say, you know, they do this in hockey very well, where you don't shake hands until the end of the series and that kind of thing. I do have a problem with this. I do. And I don't want to judge someone without knowing everything, but the fact that with 8 minutes left, you walk over and declare victory, even though we all know at that point that they're going to lose it, the optics of it aren't great. And that's something I think where, you know, Anthony Edwards does still have a little bit of maturing to do. And I think that reminds me of that this is, that's not the time to do that. I get that you want to be gracious in defeat, but with 8 minutes left in the game is not the time to wave the white flag, especially since everything that you've done and said in your career is, I'm going to keep going until they carry me off the court.
But when
that was not that.
When the coach empties the bench and all of the scrubs go in the game, isn't that the same thing?
No.
I think that is precisely the same thing. That is waving the waving the white flag. What's the difference?
Here's the difference, Jason. Here's the difference. He can't control who goes in the game. He can't control when the coach decides to empty the bench and let guys get playing time. He can control walking over there and declaring defeat to Wemby. And that's the big difference to me. There are two very different things.
You even acknowledged it was over. Everyone knows it was over.
It was over.
So this is just one of these like gentlemanly.
He gets paid an exorbitant amount of money to play until the final.
I mean, he didn't leave.
Buzzer.
He didn't leave the arena. He just went over.
Might as well have. Yeah. What's the difference? Why even bother sitting there? I'm not saying he wasn't.
But when you empty the bench, you've given up. When you empty the bench, you've given up. I don't know if
it's. That's not his decision. That's not his call. His call is to walk over there and do that. That's the one thing he can control, and he controlled it. in a way that I think put off a lot of fans.
I mean, I don't know if he's been asked about it yet, because I'm curious what the motivation was. Is it because when the other team wins, you don't really get a chance to do anything more than a cursory congratulation? I mean, the motivation I'm curious about, but I think the outrage is more a little, it's a little bit too of the, like, well, this is the proper way to do things for my taste.
I'm not going as far as being outraged, but I can understand people who are upset. And again, if Anthony Edwards is going to sit here and say, you know, I'm going to play every minute of every single game my life. I'm going to play through everything.
I mean, I'm not pro. I'm just not con. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't upset me. I think that mostly it's old fans. You're one of the younger fans expressing disappointment in this.
It's kind of a boomer sports take, a little bit. I've been called a boomer many times, so I appreciate being called younger.
I mean, if you're asking me, would I have suggested that Anthony Edwards go do this? I would not. So, like, that's to sort of shade where I'm at on this, but, you know.
Well, and I mean, go do it.
It's better than talking about losing by 30, whatever. Like, I mean,
correct.
Yikes.
Send him a text after the game.
I guess.
Walk to the locker room and tell him good job where there's not cameras and people watching. But
that's fair.
Think of it this way. Think of it this way. You spent $300 to $400 on the ticket to that game to see Anthony Edwards, and with 8 minutes left, he said, "Sorry, you're not getting these last 8 minutes of entertainment from me. I'm out."
Well,
wouldn't you just be a little annoyed
if he had pulled himself out of the game? But the coach is always, you know, the coach waved the flag, so I guess it doesn't bother me that Ant did. I mean, if the other side of this is saying like that starters should play to the end no matter what, which is sort of the fans bought a ticket argument.
I don't agree with that. I don't, again, like the emptying the bench and let guys play. I mean, listen, the only playing time I got in high school was after the coach waved the white flag. Like, that was it.
And
so
that's
I get it. That's important
for those guys, too. When you look at the Minnesota Wild, they were, you know, they ran into a buzzsaw, you know, against the dominant number one team in hockey. I look at this season and feel like this was a nice step forward, but you still are left with a fair number of questions, right? The number one thing that you would address with this team, looking at kind of what we saw, what would it be?
Well, there's a lot of questions. I mean, at this point, I think everyone's going to talk about needing more depth up the middle. And you're right, though. I mean, this series to me was less about what the Wild did and more about what the Avalanche did. And I mean, the Avalanche were the best team in the NHL. They have been for the second half of the season, and they played a great game. Minnesota made some mistakes. And when you make mistakes against a team like Colorado, they capitalize. And that's exactly what you saw. There were injuries to key players at key times, and especially in this series without Eriksson Ek and Jonas Brodin, those two guys, missing them. It's huge, but part of winning the Stanley Cup is who's the healthiest at the time. And that's why you don't always see the best team win. It's the one who can stay the healthiest. So I think depth is going to be an issue, but I think the biggest questions this offseason, you've already heard them, is what are they going to do with Quinn Hughes? Are they going to sign him long-term? What's going to happen to Matt Zuccarello? What are they going to do with the goaltender situation maybe? And how do they parlay that? There are a lot of questions, but to me, the majority of this team and the majority of this team's success comes back next year, and there really shouldn't be any glaring issue why this can't be run back again with the heart of this roster. And so there'll be some ancillary changes. There's probably going to be some leaving, but they may be able to add to and to see what can be added in free agency this summer.
Yeah, I think we all hope we can keep Quinn Hughes, because what a joy it has been to watch him play in a Wild uniform, right?
Yeah, and in the postseason he was clutch, and that's what you sign a guy like him for. When you know he scores a couple goals in against Dallas that were clutch, he was incredible in the postseason all around. He was incredible. The guy didn't have a bad night. I mean, I watch every single Wild game. I don't remember a night where I thought, "Boy, Quinn Hughes is off tonight." He's that good. Every time the puck is on his stick, he rarely gives it away, and he is a game changing, team changing player. And I certainly hope we get to see him in green and red for a long time.
Dave Schwartz is with us. Dave, your Wild Boys were blowing up social media because they were hanging out at Maynard's on Lake Minnetonka. Krill mm-hmm. and Quinn. I will say, pretty good taste. Like, I think Maynard's, like, that's a clutch quality summer Minnesota move, right?
Yeah, I did see that. And by the way, shout out to whoever does the PR for Maynard's to get
all of them in sweatshirts. Brilliant.
Every single one. I mean, that was just brilliant. They I don't know who does their media, PR, social media, but give them a raise because that was good.
Whoever the manager was who was like on
well
it.
Done.
Just, yes, very, very smart. I'm sure Fletcher's is pissed. Why not us?
Why not us? Yeah, I don't know, but it worked out.
There's lots of room for all of those places. I love all of them out on the lake. Nothing better.
They are fun. It is a quintessential Minnesota night. I agree.
Yeah, pretty good. It is funny how we like it. Like, seeing them hang out in the real world, I like
it. Yeah.
I like that, you know.
Well, I mean, and, you know, listen, the season didn't end the way we wanted, right? Everybody wants a Stanley Cup. But, once it's over, these guys deserve a break. They deserve to relax.
Absolutely.
They've been playing hockey, you know, every single week other than February since the beginning of September. So it's a long season.
Pretty good. Dave Schwartz, appreciate it. Thanks for being with us.
You got it.
All right, Twins baseball is coming up next. I had a great time at the Twins game yesterday. Make sure you're following me on Instagram at DeRusha J or on Facebook at The Jason DeRusha, because I'm going to post a video of what it's like to throw out a first pitch at a Twins game with my nephews. Pretty fun stuff yesterday. Continental Diamond Time is 5:57. Graduation, Father's Day coming up. Think about a pre-owned luxury timepiece. Great selection at multiple price points at Continental Diamond in St. Louis Park. Twins finish their homestand. Houston Astros coming up next.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops, and neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.